Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, Brandon Perkins. And with me, as always, is my good pal, Chris Loche. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so this episode is for June 3rd, 2023. It is the first show of the month of June and also the start of Pride Week. And you know it's the start of Pride Week because a bunch of assholes can't stop complaining about it on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, get ready for having to deal with all that shit for the next couple weeks. But in the meantime, we had some other stuff that happened this week. Amongst other things, you can stop worrying about the debt ceiling now because that bill got passed, and we'll tell you all about it. We also have the story of how a bunch of people kind of didn't ascertain the unintended consequences of legislation and ended up getting the Bible banned from middle and elementary schools in Utah. Oh, yeah, that's going to be funny. We also got some news about the presidential election in Turkey. We got stuff about Amazon and the FTC, a bunch of entertainment related stories as always, as well as an official trailer to talk about. And there's also going to be a Fast and Furious spinoff that's also there. And oh yeah, one of the former members of That 70s Show finally got what was coming to him. We'll be talking about that and more all this week on this episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off as always. We do as we always do, as is tradition. We talk about all the things we've been doing up to this week. But, well, up to this point in this week at least. And as always, we start with you, Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
I've been melting.
Mm-hmm.
It's been hitting 90 in the past couple of days here.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been very fun to deal with. Luckily, after today, we should be in the 70s for the next few days at least.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a little bit of a breather from that, having to deal with all the shit that comes with the extreme heat like that.
We are in
the middle of a drought as well up here.
Mm-hmm.
Not like an extreme one like California's had, but
mm-hmm.
I think we got about half of the general rainfall we usually get in May.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the last week or two has just been dry as a bone, so that's been fun to read about.
Yep.
But, for things I've been doing, I went and saw Across the Spider-Verse, the second of the Spider-Verse movies, which is really well done. It's a very good movie. Maybe even better than the first one, which is great to see. And more so than the original, you know, it is full of references to various bits of Spider-Man's history. Because, you know, it is about Miles running into the Spider Society that is sort of dedicated to what they call the canon and preventing, you know, the different Spider-Man universes. From, you know, missing those so that they don't just destroy those universes, that kind of stuff. In running around that, you run into a lot of different kinds of Spider-Men. You know, there's, what's his name? Ben Reilly?
Mm-hmm.
The one that has, like, the jean jacket outfit.
Yeah.
That dude's in there. He's very emo. A lot of the time, you know, Spider-Man 2099 is sort of the big named one that's sort of running the show in all this. But it's a lot of fun. It's really well done. And yeah, as we know, this is sort of going to be a two-parter. So they kind of end in a good way where you kind of come out of it being like, hell yeah, I'm ready for the next one.
Right.
It's not going to be out till next year. So that'll be a bit of a wait, but they do a lot of good stuff with this one. And yeah, definitely recommend people checking it out if you like the first one. So yeah, there's that. Then there's I Think You Should Leave. The third season is out now. another 6 episodes of some really good skit comedy that, you know, there's some that are already starting to circulate. One that's about, you know, an egg game that Tim Robinson's character is trying to play, and it's screwing him over a bunch until, you know, his coworkers are sort of seeing what's going on, and then it just, let's just say, starts stripping in front of him in a way that's just very funny. And there's the person that made that an actual game sort of was posting about it on Twitter and also sharing the link to an itch version that somebody made based on what people saw in the skit, that kind of stuff. There's a really good one. It's about the, you know, the pay it forward stuff at fast food that people do on occasion, of paying for the person behind them. Except what if somebody tried to use that as a scam?
Yeah.
Of, you know, ordering a ridiculous amount of food to get the person ahead of them to pay for it, which is just a very funny bit. And yeah, there's a lot of other good ones in there. So yeah, definitely worth people checking that stuff out. The other thing I've been watching is more Futurama. I'm still in season 3, but I'm getting to the episodes where they're really trying to fuck you up. You know, like Luck of the Fryrish, which is Fry thinking his brother stole his identity. But finding out actually he named his son in name of his brother. Who did lots of great things. In that, so there's that. There's a bunch of stuff like that. It's in like the last 2 seasons. That is sort of some of the best stuff that Futurama did when they kind of did more fun and emotional character stuff. So yeah, that's been fun to still work my way through for games. I've been playing more Tears of the Kingdom. I beat my first dungeon, the water dungeon. I got a little tripped up on one part of it too. Just to activate it, I didn't realize it was essentially like a riddle. Essentially, so I just looked and was like, oh, I've been up here. I just didn't realize there was a thing that I had to see that would, you know, let me activate the start of that whole dungeon sequence. But that was fun, because in that dungeon, you get some kind of anti-grav kind of abilities. So that you can kind of make some bigger and longer jumps than you normally can. So there's a lot of fun stuff with that. The annoying thing was like a lot of the things that enemies would drop and shield or chests would drop were just all melee weapons. Where I was sort of running out of bows because, you know, taking a lot of enemies out with bows and nobody's really dropping much. But eventually got through it. And managed to trap myself in one of the ending parts. Just sort of a little building that opens up for a bit. Managed to get myself stuck in there because I didn't realize I hadn't technically started the dungeon or the final part yet. I had to go do a little story thing before everything else started going on. So other than that was perfectly fine. But you have to go through a lot of exposition after that. I'm guessing that's what a lot of the other dungeons are like, where it's like, oh, there's all this stuff they got to talk about. But yeah, that's been fun. Now I can get back to the regular part of the game. So there you go. And the last thing, I got on sale on Steam, a game called Garden Simulator, where you're kind of just, the story is that you've inherited this house in the middle of the woods and decided to quit your job to become a gardener. I don't know what that seems like the stupid part of the story. Cause, you're like, I have a high paying, you know, IT job. I'm going to go to the woods to become a gardener. And I guess, I don't know, you're selling the stuff you're making, but not like directly. Like the first like plant you really get is the, an eggplant that you can make. So once you harvest, you know, the stuff that gets made every day or two, that gets produced, you know, you get a little bit of cash with XP and that kind of stuff, but mm-hmm. it's just kind of a thing you're just kind of keeping up on, trying to complete quests. You get asking you to do different things and trying to unlock more things in the shop to grow and all that stuff. So it's pretty decent, but nothing amazing.
Yeah,
you do have a cat that hangs out in the yard, and it's a giant cat. Mm-hmm. They don't really have the perspective right on the cat.
Right.
But the annoying thing is it gets in the way all the time, so you're trying to mow the yard, and it's, you know, just running in front of you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not, there's not nothing really too consequential, anything you're doing, just maintaining these plants and all that kind of stuff. So that's been pretty much it for me, Brandon. How about you? What have you been doing?
Well, like you, I'm still also playing Tears of the Kingdom. I've gotten all of the Dragon Tears. So, yeah.
So you saw that whole thing?
Yeah, I've seen that whole thing. And, it's really neat that they kind of put that in a way where, like, you don't really have to do all of, you don't really, it's one of those things where it's, like, put aside, it's not, you know, necessarily something you have to do to, like, finish the main part of the game, but they leave it there, and they leave out, you know, it gives you a bunch of stuff to find out about, Zelda lore, and they really are going all in on world building this time around, and a lot about the Zelda timeline and all that stuff, and where, you know, also, and, you know, brings up a lot of questions, like, what happened to the Zelnai themselves? Why are there only, like, a couple of them still around by the time that, you know, the Hyrule is first founded? You know, by only Rauru and his sister. I have been told that apparently some of that question can be answered if you get all of the shrines done and then get a item called the, I forgot what it's called. It's like the Heroes something or other. But there's also some other stuff I did. I've gotten all of the Fierce Deity set. So I've got the armor, the boots, the trousers, the mask, and the Fierce Deity sword. Which, basically what all that stuff does is it triples the amount of damage that you can do with any weapon that you're holding. And the Fierce Deity sword itself is actually pretty strong. So, yeah. That required a little bit of hunting, because it's basically like a whole sort of side quest where you're like trying to hunt down this dude's treasure. And you basically have to go through like half of Hyrule to be able to find parts of it. There's this one part where you have to like go to Skull Lake, which it's called Skull Lake because it's literally shaped like a skull. And there's like this long, like it looks like a pillar of salt that's coming out of the left, quote unquote, eye of the skull in the Skull Lake. And you have to like paraglide over right on top of it so that you can glide down it in order to get, I think it was the mask. But on top of that, I've done all the temples, all four of the temples, so that's squared out of the way. I've got all the champions with me, you know, their particular power that helps me, which basically means after you do all the temples, that means that they finally start seeing sightings of Zelda in the actual castle that, you know, I've more or less been avoiding up to this point. So, yeah, I got to go over there. And I've been sort of running around the castle a little bit. Basically, it's Zelda's, like, apparitions of Zelda showing up. And then once you finally get in contact with her, she basically disappears. And then there's a bunch of monsters that show up that you have to fight. And, you know, it's everything from, like, moblins to, you know, the giant, like, cyclops-looking dudes. You know, it's... it can be difficult, but I'm still doing that. Let's see what else. I did some more of the shrines, including one of the like Zonai devices that you can get is literally like a drone. Like, I mean, not like a flying drone, but like it's the closest thing I can compare it to is like a Roomba on tank treads that you can basically attach like any type of, you know, like a spike pad or, you know, a flame emitter or whatever on it. And it'll, you know, it'll hunt down your enemy and it'll fight them, you know. You know, so there's that. The Fire Temple, by the way, I would say if you can do any temples like in an order, I would probably do the Wind Temple first and then the Fire Temple, because the Fire Temple, as difficult as it can be, if you do the Fire Temple, you get, you know, the Gorok's sort of, you know, main power, which basically, if you get that power, you'll never have to start use, you know, bomb flowers again, because his power is basically rolling up and then breaking boulders apart. So, if you're having trouble, like, trying to get through places that are, like, blocked off with all these boulders, you can just use him. And he actually, like, regenerates his power pretty fast of, like, all four of them. So, you know, he's pretty useful. Oh, what else? Oh, I also found the Horned Beeler statue. Did you ever encounter that thing in Breath of the Wild? It was like a, it was like a statue that you would like, it would deal and like, you would have to like sacrifice like hearts or something like that to gain power. I found one of those. It's actually hiding like directly underneath the castle. Well, not underneath the castle. It's in like a castle secret passage down where like the emergency shelter is. So I found that. And, yeah, just the Fire Temple, actually, I also forgot to mention, the Fire Temple is also really fun because one of the things you have to do in order to get into it is you end up having to fight, like, this three-headed, like, marble rock dragon that sprouts out of Mount Doom. Death Mountain. And in order to fight it, you have to, like, take control of, like, this Zonai device. It's, like, a glider with, like, fans attached to it and a couple of batteries. So that you're basically, like, flying around the mountain and using your Gorok Pal to break them apart, which is actually kind of cool. I just wish, you know, the Zonai stuff controlled better. But, you know, that's just me. But yeah, that's basically it as far as, like, gaming goes. Also, you know, as far as reading, I'm still reading Blood Meridian. I'm about halfway through it now. Does not get any less horrifyingly violent, but it's still a really engaging read and still shockingly easy to read, as people often told me, Cormac McCarthy can be notoriously very wordy. And he is, but, you know, after a while, you kind of get used to it. And, you know, also reading Carl May, he's still as crazy and over the top as ever. And, really, other than that, just, you know, work stuff. You know, I do, like, short shifts, but, you know, the work can be grueling at times, and I come home sore. But, yeah, so that's over. Yeah, so that's pretty much everything I've been doing this week. You got anything you want to add on before we move on?
Nope.
Okay. Well, then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, so, Chris, I'm sure you've probably heard this before. Diamonds. They're not really as expensive as they usually are on the market, are they?
No.
No, they're, there's a lot of, there's this sort of story about how, like, diamonds, despite how much they cost and how much our society, you know, covets them, that in reality, they're not as rare or as expensive out in the wild as you would think they are. They're very plentiful in around Africa and places like Rhodesia and Sierra Leone and all those places. And as everybody knows, that basically amounts to blood diamonds, which are, you know, diamonds that are mined in unsafe conditions that involve things like child labor, rape, slavery, workplace injuries, and death are common. Some of these, you know, diamond firms will hire like death squads and stuff to guard and put down any kind of possible labor unrest But here's the thing I don't think a lot of people know is how diamonds basically became the way, how they became so expensive in the first place. And also, the guy who's more or less single-handedly responsible for doing it. So, the guy you need to know about, and not only that, he also, the same guy who founded this company and basically made the modern diamond trade, also was a guy who founded one of the most infamous states in Africa, and was like, you'll see. The country still exists today, just not under the name it was founded on, but you'll find out. So the guy you need to know about is, his name was Cecil Rhodes. He was a British, basically a British, for lack of a better word, he was a British imperialist. He basically was the head of what was called the British South Africa Company. And through his private military force and through collaboration with the British government and the British military, he was basically able to conquer a good chunk of South Africa through sheer military power. And when he didn't use military power, he also used mineral rights, because he would just buy up a bunch of mineral rights, sometimes at price, sometimes lower price, or he would just, use relatively just underhanded tactics to get a hand of the minerals. But basically what happened is Cecil Rhodes basically was the head of this company, and he found out that there was a crap done to diamonds in South Africa. And so with the help of some business associates, he founded a company you may have heard of. It's called the De Beers Company. Yes, they're still very much around. And they basically control the diamond market. So he basically, how he did this was he took advantage of the fact that all of these mines that were in and around Southern Africa needed shared infrastructure in order to effectively mine all of these diamonds. And through, his wealth gain through the British South Africa Company, he was able to build that infrastructure and basically lease it all exclusively to himself. By the late 1880s, he had basically monopolized the diamond trade, which then did something called the Diamond Syndicate. Basically, all of the smaller time owners of all those individual mines, he got them all to collaborate together to then create something called artificial scarcity. Artificial scarcity is when you've got a plenty of a certain object or commodity or product that you intentionally withhold the majority of it so that you can manipulate the price and the market share. Because of this, he was basically able to make the price of diamonds skyrocket. And through that, he was basically able to make the diamond trade extremely profitable. It needs to be made very clear. Diamonds are not exactly rare. Like I said, they're found all over, mineral places all over Africa. They're very, very, very plentiful. But the mining of them, of course, can be dangerous. Not helping with the fact that, the labor conditions aren't exactly much good. And on top of that, there's also the problem that, grinding them and turning them into those pretty little stones you put on rings costs money. Now, that's just part of the story. See, Cecil Rhodes died in 1902. So by the time he died, De Beers basically controlled about 90% of the diamond trade. 90%. Literally, 90. 9/10 of the diamond trade was controlled by him. But after he died, a gentleman named Ernest Oppenheimer would take over, and then he would go one step further than Rhodes did. He would write up exclusive contracts with all the diamond suppliers that worked for the De Beers Company, and put in these steel-clad non-compete clauses in them so that they could not work for anyone other than De Beers Company. And if any potential competitor ever came up, because the De Beers had a significant fortune at their hand, they could very quickly buy them out through basically a hostile takeover. Because of that, De Beers has been controlling the diamond market for over a century. Now, it needs to be pointed out that, you know, it's not at necessarily as if it's gone unchallenged. In fact, their hold over the market has been weakened in recent years, thanks to the governments of Australia, Canada, and Russia, basically saying, you know, we're not going to cooperate with this company any longer. They're also basically the ones who started the whole Diamonds Are Forever campaign, which you may have heard. By the way, diamonds are not forever. They're decaying graphite, and they will eventually go bad. So, but that's also not where the story ends, because Cecil Rhodes had another thing that he did. You see, while he was going about the British South Africa Company, you know, doing all this diamonds and stuff, he had another little project that he was doing, which was straight up just founding his own colonies, which, you know, was a very common thing for people in the British Empire at the time. So after, you know, Rhodes died, his little territory that he began to personally own was taken over by his successors, and they renamed the country in his honor. You may have heard of it. It's called Rhodesia. You are familiar with the history of South Africa and its issues with apartheid and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Rhodesia was like that, except for the fact that it basically had no chill. Rhodesia was infamous for its brutal racial policies, even by the standards of the British Empire. And after, you know, decolonization started to happen in effect in the 1960s, Rhodesia basically declared itself independent in 1965 under a white-dominated government, which was run by a guy named Ian Smith. Delightful guy, that Ian Smith. Look him up sometime. As you can imagine, this did not sit well with the black majority residents who lived in Rhodesia, and this eventually led to a civil war. And eventually what happened is that after half a decade of civil war, the international community finally basically put their foot down, and they forced Rhodesia to hold an election in which all of the racial groups within Rhodesia could participate in, which of course brought an end to white minority rule forever. This eventually was led to what would then be the first democratically elected leader in Rhodesia that all races did, and unfortunately it would be the last, because the gentleman they ended up electing was a man by the name of Robert Mugabe. You may have heard of him. And after he did that, he renamed the country to Zimbabwe, and that's where we are today. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Ah, that's a nice one, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, so with that out of the way, it's now time for the show proper. As always, with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first assholes of the week are these two gentlemen from the Oath Keepers Militia who have been officially sentenced to prison terms for their part in the January 6th insurrection.
Yeah, let's see here. These are two Army veterans who stormed the U.S. Capitol in a military-style formation.
Mm-hmm.
With fellow members of the Oath Keepers were sentenced on a Friday to prison terms.
Mm-hmm.
There is Jessica Watts. Yeah, Jessica Watkins of Woodstock, Ohio, to 8 years and 6 months behind bars.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenneth Harrelson of Titusville, Florida, to 4 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So neither one were able to get the seditious conspiracy charge.
Mm-hmm.
But they were convicted of other charges, including obstructing Congress's certification of President Joe Biden's victory, among other things. So, yeah. Good news, put them away for a long time.
Yeah. Let's hope so. Yeah, and we also got this little news. You guys may have remembered last week when we talked about how Attorney General of Texas Ken Paxton, that he had had a bunch of paperwork filed to begin procedures on his impeachment so that he would, you know, he would be basically have to step down, you know, during his expulsion trial. Well, he has officially been impeached by the Texas House. That happened, I think it was it Monday or Tuesday? And it was very quick, and it was pretty much, like, bipartisan.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think this was on Saturday they did this. But yeah, he is impeached. He will immediately and temporarily be suspended from his duties pending a trial in the state Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, let's see, yeah, a statement on Twitter after the vote, Ken Paxton wrote, "The ugly spectacle in the Texas House today confirmed the outrageous impeachment plot against me. It was never meant to be fair or just. It was a politically motivated sham from the beginning."
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he hasn't learned anything from this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he joins a small list of Texas public officials who have been impeached, but the last one was in 1976, so nearly 50 years ago.
Yeah.
For that. So that's cool.
Yeah, and it's like, wow, how badly did he screw up that even everyone in his own party wanted him gone?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm genuinely curious what it is that they decided to, you know, do this on. Because there's a part of me that seems to suspect that that they know something that we don't, like something bad, and they just don't want it to get out. But
yeah.
So he had to vacate his seat, and now he's basically like they've had to put in like a temporary replacement while the vote and the trial and everything goes on. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. And now for another asshole, Danny Masterson, who, of course, is from That 70s Show, and, of course, a infamous member of the Church of Scientology, has officially been found guilty of 2 out of 3 counts of rape in his retrial.
Yeah, so the jury of 7 women and 5 men reached the verdict after deliberating for 7 days spread over 2 weeks. They could not reach a verdict on the third count, but they had voted 8-4 in favor of conviction. But Masterson was led from the courtroom in handcuffs, could face up to 30 years in prison. So that is good to see. Hopefully he gets a long sentence there.
Yeah. And now for a little bit of shit out of my neck of the woods. Over in Atlanta, the state government has arrested and charged the 3 leaders of the Atlanta Solidarity Fund with money laundering and charity fraud because they were helping the protesters against Cop City. And for the record, Cop City is basically something nobody in Atlanta wants.
Yeah, it is sort of a training center of sorts.
Yeah, and universally nobody in the city of Atlanta wants this thing.
Yeah, there's enough cops in Atlanta.
Yeah, and yet, in spite of all this, in fact, the fact that the vast majority of the people of the residents of Atlanta have shown their displeasure and distaste at this little project going forward, the city and state government are just bound and determined to make this thing happen.
Yeah, and punishing people with ridiculous charges like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you can't have like a charity fund for supporting protesters.
Yeah.
Like that happens all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
But they are claiming that they're being, that they were money laundering and committing charity fraud with this, which just seems just very coincidental.
Mm-hmm.
That they are helping people protest against the Cop City.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, our last assholes of the week are the people who run YouTube, because there's just obviously not enough issues with YouTube at all. YouTube will officially no longer take down videos falsely claiming stolen U.S. election.
Yeah. This is annoying stuff. I think the defense is sort of the legal approach that, you know, this is technically free speech of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just does not make for good luck that they're going to essentially aid in the spread of conspiracies, further mm-hmm. conspiracies about past and future elections. So just more shit that's going to be going up on YouTube to drown out all the good stuff that's on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they said they will stop removing content that advances false claims that widespread fraud, errors, or glitches occurred in the 2020 and other past U.S. presidential elections because things have changed. It said the decision was carefully deliberated. But yeah, they have, I think, are going on the legal approach that they sort of don't want to end up in lawsuits about this kind of content and being forced to host that kind of content.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
just going the unfortunate way. So
yeah. And of course, you know, being that this is YouTube, they could easily, you know, backpedal, you know, once the next election rolls around and they decide to cut back on it. So fortunately, it's not all bad because we did have some good stuff happen this week. First of all, so we got our heroes of the week to sort of wipe bad taste out of our mouths. And first is both the House and Senate have voted to approve the debt ceiling bill on somewhat bipartisan support. And it was signed into law by President Biden this morning.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And yeah, kind of somewhat bipartisan because a lot of the a number of the progressive parts of the Democratic Party did not vote for these, as well as much of the far right wing of the Republicans refused to vote.
Yep. Well, I mean, we all knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, you had your Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz and all them acting very offended that, you know, Kevin McCarthy did not want to, you know, crash the economy the way they wanted because they, the so-called Freedom Caucus held a big press conference. I forget when it was, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, somewhere on there.
Mm-hmm.
Just whining that they couldn't just destroy the U.S. and global economy.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the whole thing. But I think the, it was 314 to 117 with the Dems voting more for this bill than the Republicans did.
Yeah.
Which is also another thing that pisses off, you know, your Marjorie Taylor Greens and all them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Republican Senator Mike Lee wanted, you know, vowed to use all of his parliamentary procedures to stall this vote, but
yeah,
it didn't work.
Nope.
But yeah, the Senate, it passed 63-36 with, you know, Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and some of those not voting for it.
Mm-hmm.
But still passed by a good margin.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that all worked out. Largely, it's pretty neutral on anything it does. There's a couple of bad things, a couple of good things.
Mm-hmm.
It pushes the debt ceiling thing off for another 2 years, so
yeah,
you don't have to worry about that for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
Until after the election, so that'll be fun.
Oh, yes, just so much fun.
Yep, so there you go.
Yeah. And we also got this story. The family of Andarian Murray is suing the city and at least two police officials over their son's shooting. You may remember he was like 11-year-old who called police that he was being, there was like a domestic disturbance happening in his house, and
yeah,
answered the door and the cop shot him.
Yep. In Indianola, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
They filed the federal lawsuit against the city and two police officers, at least two of them, for shooting their son.
Yeah.
He suffered a collapsed lung, a fractured rib, and a lacerated liver.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that did a lot of damage to him.
Mm-hmm.
They're seeking at least $5 million in damages. accusing the police department of gross negligence and reckless disregard and failing to properly train and supervise its officers.
Yep.
They've called for the officer involved to be fired, along with police chief Ronald Sampson. They also want police body camera footage of the incident released.
Which, for the record, they have been doing everything they possibly can to not have to release that body cam footage.
Yeah, because they know it makes them look terrible.
Mm-hmm. Like, that stuff should automatically be public record. Just...
Yeah.
But, yeah. Now for a story of how, yeah, this is what happens when you don't really think too clearly about your, you know, culture war legislation bullshit. A school district in the state of Utah has officially removed the King James version of the Bible from middle and elementary schools for obscenity reasons.
Yep. Yeah, so the ban will take effect immediately, with Bibles being removed from classrooms even as they close down for the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one that I think we talked about last year that a parent put in place because, you know, the book contains pornographic or indecent material.
Yeah.
Yeah, it calls the Bible one of the most sex-ridden books around.
Not wrong.
Yeah. And yeah, these, like a lot of the issues with these processes is that people are able to sort of flood them with reports, whether they are fruitful or not. And a lot of districts maybe don't have the manpower to deal with them in the way that they, in the way you would want it to be dealt with. Cause you know, not many school districts are flush with money and, you know, people to work on this kind of stuff versus, you know, the things that they, that you would want them to be focused on.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is an unsurprising thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like the Bible would be something kids would seek out in these areas.
No.
Either way.
No. I mean, this is Utah.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm wondering, like, are they going to try and do this Book of Mormon? Because if they did that, that would just be hilarious. Because that would mean they'd actually have to read the Book of Mormon. And have you ever tried to read the Book of Mormon? It's difficult. Just ask Patrick. But,
yeah.
And our last hero of the week, a federal judge that was, I believe this was actually, was nominated by former President Trump, has actually rejected Tennessee's anti-drag law for being too broad and vague. And I think in his opinion, he even makes a specific point that it goes against the First Amendment.
Yeah. Yeah, it said the law is both unconstitutionally vague and substantially overbroad.
Yep.
It encouraged discriminatory enforcement.
Yeah.
There's no question that obscenity is not protected by the First Amendment, but there is a difference between material that is obscene in the vernacular and material that is obscene under the law.
Yeah.
Simply put, no majority of the Supreme Court has held that sexually explicit but not obscene speech receives less protection than political, artistic, or scientific speech.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would have banned adult cabaret performances from public property.
Yep.
Or anywhere minors might be present.
Mm.
Performers who broke the law risk being charged with a misdemeanor or a felony for repeat offense.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the judge used the example of a female performer wearing an Elvis Presley costume and mimicking the iconic musician who could be at risk of punishment under drag law because they would be considered a male impersonator.
Yep.
And it's like all that kind of stuff. That's just the dumb thing. Part of these is like, you know, women don't just wear, you know, dresses and skirts and all that. They wear male clothes all the time.
Yeah.
And even performers do. Like that's technically drag if you're going to get offended by the men wearing, you know, wigs and dresses and that.
Seriously. They didn't think this crap through.
No, they just let their bigotry run rampant.
Mm-hmm. And all it basically amounted to is making them look like fools.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, that is it for the show proper. We now move on to the proper show proper. And our first unfortunate story for the proper show proper is that Erdogan won the presidential runoff in Turkey.
Yeah.
Now, it was close, extremely close.
Yeah.
I have a feeling this will not be the last we hear about it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so.
Yeah, got 52.14% of the mm-hmm. vote and 47.86 for his opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, pretty close. But yeah, obviously not good enough to get him out of there.
No.
To maybe get the people of Turkey democracy once again.
Yeah. Unfortunately, but I have a feeling this is not going to be something else is going to come up. Moving on from there, Chris Christie has announced that he will be once again running for president. And he's pretty much made it clear that the reason he's doing it is it's basically vengeance.
Yeah, I guess. But nobody cares about Chris Christie.
Yeah, nobody does. He just...
It's like, you're going to be the more reasonable candidate than Trump, but there's five or six of those.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them are appealing to anybody.
Right.
So he's just going to raise money and mm-hmm. just waste it on a campaign that is futile.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't been relevant in any sort of national picture in at least like almost 10 years at this point.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because he ran in, what, 2016, and then obviously fell like everybody else to Trump. Mm-hmm. And then he spent years just kissing Trump's ass for whatever reason. Much like everybody else, he has shed on the people that were supporting him. So
mm-hmm.
that's where Chris Christie is at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this next story is we've got another bill that's coming to Biden's desk, but he said that he's going to be vetoing it. He will be vetoing the bill that the Senate barely passed to repeal his administration's student loan relief plan.
Yeah. And that passed because of Senators Joe Manchin and John Tester.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Voted against it, as well as Kyrsten Sinema.
Mm-hmm.
Who's technically an independent.
Yeah.
And they gave them a 52-46 vote.
Yep.
Victory, which, Biden has said he is not going to deal with this, just going to veto it,
mm-hmm.
Which I think would require, a 2/3 vote in the Senate to pass it, and they're not going to get that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's effectively dead. So, yeah, they're still going through the courts on this thing, so... That is the
mm-hmm.
The big deal right now.
Mm-hmm. But, so that's happening. And now the Federal Trade Commission is officially requiring Amazon to pay over $30 million over privacy claims with both Ring and Alexa.
Yeah. More than $30 million in fines to settle alleged privacy violations involving its voice assistant, Alexa, and doorbell camera Ring,
mm-hmm.
Which is because the FTC claims the tech company violated privacy laws by keeping recordings of children's conversations with its voice assistant Alexa and another, that its employees have monitored customers' Ring camera recordings without their consent.
Mm-hmm.
The FTC alleges Amazon held onto children's voice and geolocation data indefinitely.
Yeah,
illegally used it to improve its algorithm and kept transcripts of their interactions with Alexa, despite parents' requests to delete them.
Mm-hmm.
So all the kind of shit that is disgusting.
Yeah.
And yeah, these would violate the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, or COPPA, which requires online companies to alert and obtain consent from parents when they gather data for children under the age of 13,
mm-hmm.
and allow parents to delete the data at will. So, in addition to the $25 million civil penalty, Amazon would not be able to use data that has been requested to be deleted. The company would also have to remove children's inactive Alexa accounts and be required to notify its customers about FTC's actions against the company.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, make them pay.
Yeah, make them pay. Make them pay. Although $30 million is kind of chump change for Amazon, to be honest.
Yeah.
They should make them pay more, but whatever. Next up, in a story of just how tourists can just be assholes, a tourist has pled guilty for handling a Yellowstone bison calf that then had to be euthanized. Nice going, Jagass.
Yeah, he thought he was doing something good because this bison calf had gotten stranded from its herd.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, upon handling it long enough, you know, changed its scent so much so that the herd rejected it mm-hmm. once it eventually got over there. So they had to euthanize it as a result and was charged with one count of feeding, touching, teasing, frightening, or intentionally disturbing wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
They have paid over $1,000 in fines, including a $500 community service payment to Yellowstone's Wildlife Protection Fund.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the newborn bison had been separated from its mother on May 20th as its herd was crossing the Lamar River.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, tried to help the calf by pushing it up the bank into the roadway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the herd did not want to take the calf back, as it smelled like humans, so there you go.
Mm-hmm. And then we got this interesting bit of science news. The European Space Agency held the very first live stream from Mars.
Yeah. They streamed on YouTube, historic live images directly from the Red Planet. Let's see. Yeah, it celebrated the 20th anniversary of the launch of the agency's Mars Express orbiter.
Mm-hmm.
A mission to take three-dimensional images of the planet's surface to see it in more complete detail.
Mm.
But yeah, this is sort of live imagery of that. That is cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, depending on where Mars and Earth are in their orbits around the sun, the messages could take anywhere from 3 to 22 minutes to mm-hmm. arrive onto Earth. But this time it was taking about 17 minutes. To travel from Mars to Earth, then another minute to get through the wires and servers on the ground to get the live stream started. So,
mm-hmm.
As I said here, note, we've never tried anything like this before, so exact travel times for signals on the ground remain a little uncertain. But yeah, no stars were visible in the background of the images because Mars is quite bright.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a cool little thing to see.
Mm-hmm. Very neat. Love that we're getting there, that one step closer to that, you know, truly interstellar civilization.
Yeah.
But with our luck, it'll probably end up like Expanse. Just straight up not going to lie. But anyway, next up, we got a bunch of entertainment stories. We are thoroughly in the entertainment portion of the show. Disney Plus now has the first four Indiana Jones movies and the Young Indiana Jones series. That should be the first three Indiana Jones movies, the Young Indiana Jones series, and one absolute abomination.
It's still part of the series, whether it's good or not. But yeah.
True, but I don't have to like it.
Sure. But I always find it weird when people are like, there's just three Star Wars movies. And they're like shitting on the Return of the Jedi, and it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to like everything that's in a franchise you like.
Yeah.
That's how it all works. Like,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can watch all four of the movies ahead of the new one
mm-hmm.
Coming out. But yeah, the Young Indiana Jones yeah, The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones is also on there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool
mm-hmm.
For people to check out. And yeah, I guess also part of this, Disney Plus subscribers can get early access to buying Indiana Jones merch
mm-hmm.
Ahead of it going out to the public on June 9th. So that's cool if you want to spend more money on what they describe here as Indiana Jones ear headband for adults.
Mm.
Whatever this. Okay, I see what this is. It's a, you know, the Mickey Mouse earbud, the earband
yeah.
headband things. Yeah, it's that with like a little Indiana Jones hat and a whip attached to it between the ears. That's okay. $35 for that.
All right.
So don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
They do have the headpiece from the Staff of Ra as a pin, so that's cool.
Yeah, that's actually kind of neat.
That's $18.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a stupid Mickey Mouse, you know, ear thing. So, okay, there's just lots of shirts. You can get a leather jacket for $400.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
No.
I guess they're doing an Indiana Jones Raiders of the Lost Ark Lego set. From the Temple of the Golden Idol there. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
$150 for that. But yeah, there you go. Some Indiana Jones stuff to watch before the new movie comes out. So
mm-hmm. Hopefully it'll actually be good.
Yeah.
But then we got this story. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is his role of Luke Hobbs in a Fast and the Furious spinoff.
Yeah. This is essentially spoiling a thing at the end of Fast X, which shows him showing up to, I don't know, help out the Fast crew.
Yeah.
But, yeah, now he's getting his own standalone movie that I don't know. Is this going to be out before the next one? They say 2025 for Fast X Part 2. So, if that is the case, this one may be able to get out earlier, but who knows.
Mm.
But yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, we got the official trailer for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem.
Yeah, and this looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
The voice stuff that people had issues with doesn't sound like as much of an issue this time around. The teenagers just sound like teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It looks really good. This will be out August 2nd. So, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to this. And, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. And, yeah. So, I do believe, yeah, we got ourselves a show tonight, folks. We got ourselves a show. I know it wasn't a particularly long show, but, you know, most people are still kind of going after that post-Memorial Day hangover, I guess.
Yeah, it's like there's strikes going on. There's not much being made.
Yeah, and there might be a one happening, because, you know, I know the Writers Guild is on strike. I've been hearing that Screen Actors Guild, you know, they, which, you know, doesn't mean they are going to strike, but they authorize the one, which is something they do usually whenever they're getting ready to do, you know, new, you know, negotiations with the studios. So, yeah. So a lot of Hollywood is kind of shut down right now until, you know, the contract is signed and they finally come out of the negotiations with an actual compromise. But, yeah. So, with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link to you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator. So, we're going to go ahead and wind it down there. Thank you once again for listening to us, and thanks once again to Chris for joining me. If you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to tell your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and every, you know, group of people in between, because there is no low that we will not go just to be able to get you to listen to us. We are very desperate. But yeah, so we're going to wind it down there. Thank you for listening. Join us next week where we hopefully have some much better news to talk about. I say that every evening and every end of the show, and the world continues to fail. Good night, everybody.